This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
The obsessive killing of Dorothy Stratton. The real-life murder that inspired Twin Peaks. These stories and more are told in the Hollywoodland podcast, where true crime and Tinseltown collide. Follow and listen to Hollywoodland wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, we were talking Cavs a little bit. And are you concerned that the way they're and they're not sputtering toward the finish line, they're not stumbling toward the finish line, but they over their last 12 they are 500. Over their last 8 they're 6-2, so they've picked it back up a little bit, but it's just not typical of the way they've played all season long. Lewis is in Shaker. Lewis,
come on, Lewis.
Belt, you're a country boy. What's up with the primer? Anyway. I mean, that was just a bad match.
Lewis, yeah, no indoor plumbing for Grandpa.
Oh, that's okay. That was just a bad matchup, man. Sabonis has got to be the best center in the NBA, man. He has handles. I mean, jumper, all this. And then LaVine, I think he went like 11 straight shots he hit. I mean, they was just on fire yesterday. I personally let him get on fire,
Lewis.
I mean, how could you not stop him, Phelps?
Yeah, I know.
And I mean, how could you not stop it?
It only takes another team getting on fire 4 times, and you're out of the playoffs.
Well, he could hit the broad side of the bar in the first half, and all of a sudden, You know, he caught fire. I'm not too concerned. You know, I think they'll, you know, put it together, and you know, I'm do what we have to do. Abdul Carter, Phelps, I called yesterday. I hate being the old fogey who calls in. Yesterday, I found out that Abdul Carter runs a 4.3 40, which is blazing fast. Now, I'm like, if you put him alongside Myles Garrett, that's the 85 Bears. One of the guys was like, well, they're going to score 33 points, and we're not going to have any offense. Excuse me, the 85 Bears, you wouldn't score in 13 points. So, you know, I hate being an old pokey in the room, man. That's just me.
Hang in there, Lewis. It'll be all right, buddy. Appreciate it, Lewis.
Say a 4.3 40.
Yeah, it doesn't sound right. What's the time?
I'm looking right now. It says apparently he didn't test at the combine.
Yeah, I was gonna
say,
has he even ran one? Because he didn't do anything at his pro day either.
No, because he was still dealing with a shoulder injury at that point they were talking about. It does say a 4.3 to 4.38 in an article written via Bleacher Report. That's all I have for you. 4.3 in the range. I don't know how accurate where they got the measurement, but they say 4.3. So, the word on the street per Albert Breer is what they wrote.
Honestly, it would be so easy if there were two quarterbacks at the top of this draft and you just thought, okay, there you go.
I would like it a lot more.
Well, it would be a no-brainer.
Yeah.
See, that's the catch here. And that makes this a real challenge. We'll get into that coming up 1 o'clock. Cynthia Freeland's going to join us. Jerry's in Cleveland. Jerry.
Hi, how you doing?
Good, Jer. Good to have you with us. Thanks.
I just wanted to hear both of your opinions. Now that we got DeAndre Hunter, would you say the core four has changed, or is it a core five? Would you say that he is, after Evan Mobley and Donovan Mitchell, the next most important player on the team? So if the season ends badly, would you be sure the Cavs would keep him and trade maybe Darius Garland?
I don't think I think Darius still probably sits as the third best guy, Jerry. I don't think that I'd put DeAndre up there. He's probably your most impactful guy. I'd say he definitely slots at least into the five spot. He might slot into the four spot above Jared Allen, but they play two very different roles. And I think the Cavs right now enjoy having the two big men alongside of each other. So I don't know that they would be looking to move anybody just to keep Hunter. I think acquiring his contract, they're basically saying, yeah, we'd like to keep him. Ty Jerome's the guy you got to worry about being gone.
And remember, Jerry, DeAndre Hunter is under contract, so he'll be here. I think, Jerry, they took four players and made them five key players for this team. And even if things went really, really south and they get knocked out in the first or second round, I would be really surprised if they decided to bust up that fivesome. I would think these guys are here for next year.
Well, I hope so. I just look at I was one of the guys who always was worried in terms of having two little guys in your starting backcourt.
Join the club, Jerry.
Yeah, so that's why I was asking with DeAndre Hunter.
No, Hunter is here. It took them a long time to find a guy who can play that spot, Jake. And they got a good one. He does a very nice job. I don't see him going anywhere.
No, he's going to be here.
If they decided to bust it up, which I don't think they would do, if they decided to bust it up, I would think you would move one of the little guys in the backcourt and it wouldn't be Donovan. So I think that's down the road. And that's if things go really bad. And I don't expect them to change it up. Tonight, you don't have to work. Congratulations.
Thank you. Day off.
Yeah.
Well, that's not
day off.
To,
here
right?
you are well, right yeah. now.
It's kind of like day off. I get somebody to talk to instead. So
there you go.
It's a half day off.
Well, I'm hopefully that's good for you. You have the Houston Cougars who were dead and buried. And they came back against the Duke Blue Devils, which I will tell you, I was sitting on the couch flipping back and forth between the Guardians and the game. And I spent more time watching the Guardians because it just seemed like Duke had it under control, you know? Yeah. And then I think I checked in. It was like a 14-point game with about 8 minutes to go, something like that. And then I flipped back, and it was like 4 minutes to go in a 5-point game. And I thought, oh, wait a minute. Something's going on here. So I ended up watching down the stretch, and there's Mike Krzyzewski sitting in the stands, and I'll bet it was all Mike could do to not jump out of his seat and run down to the bench and design an inbounds play or do something because, oh, my God, it was an 11-1 run in the final, I believe 114. 114, an 11-1 run for the Houston Cougars to come back and beat Duke. That's one of the most stunning collapses in a very long time.
And not to mention they made like one shot down the final like 10 minutes. It was awful. It was a terror. And I'm sitting there, by the way, instead of flipping back and forth, I'm two screen setup person.
So
I'm
sitting there. Yeah, where are you?
I'm sitting there watching the Guardians and the game. But you can bet I was sitting there watching it. Not that anybody cares, but that was my team in the tournament. That's who I had. I was sitting there banking on them, and I'm like, oh yeah, this game's wrapped up, having that same thought. And then I'm sitting there pulling my hair out going, no, you don't do this. No, just give the ball to Cooper Flagg. Cooper Flagg, get hot, hit some shots, inbound the ball. Let's take it fundamentals. It was not good. But Houston will do that to a degree. Very good defensive team. But I didn't think they were going to do it then.
No, you know, the thing about it, too, and as opposed to the NBA, college basketball, I think coaching can play a really huge part in the game.
Definitely.
Because these are young guys who haven't played that much basketball, and really being coached up can really be a huge factor for them. It was a 9-0 run in the final 35 seconds. How do you let that happen to your team? It was a really, really rough coaching job down the stretch. And Kelvin Sampson was terrific for Houston.
Yeah, and I mean, talk about even down to the nitty-gritty final things, right? You know Houston's going to foul. What do you do? In the NBA, it's a no-brainer. You get the ball to your best player. You don't even have to tell anybody on the court who's getting the ball. Last night, you see, I can't remember the kid's name for the life of me off the top of my head, but 68% free throw shooter starts dribbling the ball down the floor. Hello. I'm sure his coach wanted to rip his hair out at that point, sitting there going, no. Why? Just give it to your best player. If he's the one who messes up, if he misses the one-on-one,
that's the way it goes.
Yeah, you don't live with the 68% free throw shooter missing the front end of the one-on-one. It's like, yeah, that's kind of what we'd expect down the stretch in a clutch scenario. You'd put it on your star shoulders, not his. But again, that's where coaching, like you said, plays a major role because that's a moment where you need to call a timeout or make sure you're barking to your team, hey, we know who the ball's going to here. In one way, you got to have option A and option B. And I think that kid was probably like option D.
You know, the one and done in college basketball, you know, like Cooper Flagg's going to leave. He should. Yeah. He's going to make just boatloads of money. But boy, wouldn't you think there'd be a part of him that thinks this is not how this was supposed to go, and I'd love to come back and do this again. But just the realities of the way it goes, you can't walk away from that money. He's going to be the number one pick in the draft.
Not even NIL, nothing is keeping you there for that. Not being
no,
he's
not
the number one,
the
pick,
number
in the
one pick in the draft. No,
you're there 100%. Everything goes for you. You could take over an NBA. You could be, oh, I didn't get it in college. Maybe I'll win an NBA Finals next year, depending on who gets me in the lottery.
Not a bad way to go, is it? The Guardians open things up tomorrow at home. How about that? Talk about sputtering. To start a season, I wouldn't say sputter. Let's say not setting the world on fire. We'll tell you how, why, and where, and talk a little torpedo bat coming up on Baskin and Phelps. Jake Volnick's in for Andy. That's Jake Volnick. He's in for Andy today. Jake's not working his normal show this evening because of the NCAA basketball tournament. I'm Jeff Phelps. Menigan's flying the ship a little bit today. Michael's doing some training, doing a fine job. Meredith is in our new little work area. We got stuff. We got stuff going on today. That's good. That's big. That's the way we're working it.
Today's the day.
Today's the day. Tomorrow's really the day. Why? Guardians coming home, baby. Here we go. Putting that 3-6 record on the field at 221 team batting average, which, by the way, is only 21st in Major League Baseball. It's not, 29th. 3-6 through 9 games has inspired you to think anything in particular, Mr. Volnick?
The lineup's off to a bit of a slow start. Don't know that they'll turn it around, but I'm pretty sure off of 221, they'll even out. They'll come to a happy medium there at some point.
Tied for 19th in runs scored.
Yeah, it's not bad. It's middle of the
Again,
pack.
Well, yeah, you're down toward the bottom third, third with runs and batting average.
I imagine they'll probably come up to be middle of the pack.
I would think that's accurate.
The problem is then the rotation, and that's the part that scares me. As I went in looking at the rotation thinking, top two spots, relatively confident that throughout the course of the year they'll look pretty good. I have confidence in Gavin Williams. Luis Ortiz is your wild card, and 4-5, oh boy, buckle in.
Tanner Bibee's issues the other day, notwithstanding, Tanner's just fine. Right now, the Guardians have the fourth worst ERA in Major League Baseball. And it's way too early. We're not, let's just be fair about that.
Yeah.
Way too early to draw any conclusions. It's just that, okay, you expect the team to have pretty good pitching. It hasn't happened so far with an ERA of 5.09. And if this team is going to win, we would assume that the offense is not going to put up 6-7 runs a game. So that means the pitchers are going to have to do the type of job they did last year. So far, 9 games, we haven't really seen that on a regular basis.
Yeah, and I would even say that a couple of the nights, he got a decent showing out of the offense. Like, there were games, like, you win 8-6, you lose 10-4. I put up 4 runs. That's pretty much as good as a coin flip as I can give you until you got a shot in this game. Not when you give up 10. It's not going to do it. Again, I just think the rotation's scary at the back end. And the bullpen that was so highly coveted has looked good outside of maybe the guy who you need to look the absolute best, and that's Emmanuel Clase. Not pitching in very high leverage situations most of the time at this point, but early on he doesn't look to be what he was for 98% of the season. It looks to be, that Yankees series has found its way into 2025.
Yeah, thanks for bringing that up.
You're not enjoying that? You don't like that?
No, the thing about, and this isn't about Emmanuel Clase, this is about bullpen guys and sometimes even elite closers. Clase was so unbelievable last year. I mean,
almost a Cy Young.
Right. He deservedly so, an ERA under 1. If you remember the year before, he had some issues. He was not the sharpest. He was 3-9 because he blew a bunch of saves, and his ERA was a career high 3.22 2 years ago. Sometimes guys, even elite guys, might have a year where it's not quite there, and then they have a year where it's absolutely lights out. And he was so good last year. How are you going to repeat that? You're not going to repeat 0.61 ERA. Okay, that's just not going to happen. That's not happening. And we also have to make sure 3.22 ERA out of your closer with nine losses doesn't happen again. And that, unfortunately, he's more on that path, more on the Yankee series path, than he was the regular season path last year.
Yeah, I'd be happy with a middle ground. I don't need you to have a sub-1 ERA. Again, you're in contention for the Cy Young. I don't expect that year to year. He gave up 5 runs last year. He's given up 3 across 9 games.
Yeah, what's that tell you?
I don't know, honestly. He's a guy that clearly, I thought, trusted his stuff last year, but now I don't think his teams have figured him out. He's a guy who throws a 102-mile-an-hour cutter. You don't just figure that. Like, there's no figuring that out. Not to a perfect degree. Not when it has that much movement. Like, you throw that pitch, there's clearly something off mentally that maybe you're just not as confident. You're laying things out there. You're letting people get the ball to the bat. I don't know. But he has put himself in now a territory where if I see Emmanuel Clase now stepping to the bump, where last year I could have walked away, went to bed if it was a night game. Now I'm on the edge of my seat and I'm up by 2.
Yeah. The problem for this team is, and it's not a problem as long as they do their job, this team is predicated on the back end of the bullpen being nails. And that has to be the case. We're going to have Chris Antonetti, by the way, president of baseball operations, on with us at 10:40 tomorrow. So, and Tom Withers is going to be joining us tomorrow on the show. So that'll be fun. It'll be Dano, me, Tom Withers, because you're going to be working your show.
Right. Talk about an upgrade. You get Tom over me.
No, I didn't say that.
You didn't have to. I did.
Well, Tom's going to be working with the station a little bit from time to time. Tom from the Associated Press. So he's going to be in with me tomorrow for Andy. So I'm looking forward to that. And Chris Antonetti will join us at 10:40. So anxious to talk to Chris. But the back end of this bullpen was so good last year. And, you know, all Stephen Vogt had to do was get his starters through 5 or 6 innings and turn it over to the bullpen. Chances are you're going to get a win if you had the lead. That's tough because that means these guys have to come through and do it again. And remember, they sorted through some guys last year. Nick Sandlin was really good for a long time. Scott Barlow was pretty good. Scott got dispatched last year. Sandlin dispatched to Toronto this year. And they've put some new guys in there. Are you sure that Paul Sewald is going to be as good as he's been in the past? We don't know that. Is Clase going to have an ERA under 1? No, he's not. I mean, that's silly.
That's a given now. I mean, again, he's got 2 runs for about the rest of the year if he wants to do it. So good luck.
Which is unbelievable. And so it's just a situation that Stephen Vogt's going to have to figure out and make it work. There are a couple of guys on the offensive side. I want your thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
This came up last week. I couldn't agree more. Kyle Manzardo needs to play all the time. An occasional day off, maybe, right? Just because you want a guy to be fresh. But let's see what you have here. You know, he's been good. He had a better start, cooled off a little bit lately. But he's 24 years old. He's been swinging a pretty decent bat. I want to see more of Manzardo. I don't want to see him out of the lineup.
Well, yeah, because what did they tell you this offseason? By moving off of Jimenez, by moving off of Naylor, we have young guys that we're going to entrust in, that we're going to bank on. Okay, then you need to 100% buy into that fact. And you got Carlos Santana, a gold glove level first baseman. That's fine if he sits there and rotates DH with Kyle Manzardo. It's the problem of the days that you sat down Manzardo, I think against the Padres, against a lefty, and you brought Jonathan Rodriguez out.
And they did that when Manzardo was 4 of 5 on lefties.
Yeah, with 2 homers.
Yes.
Like, you just throw him out there. If he goes 0 for 4, he goes 0 for 4.
I couldn't understand that move either. It's like, he's really hot. He's been hitting lefties. Let's not start him. But what the? Maybe it was something specific for that game. You know, we don't like the matchup against this particular lefty. But that's what I'm thinking. It's like, why do you not start him there? You start him all the time. Find out if you have starting caliber talent on this team that deserve to be in the lineup all the time. Mike Hargrove always said, and I brought this up last week when Dan and I were doing the show, Mike's line was always, your starters are starters for a reason. And the longer you go and you think about that, it's true. Well, why is he your starter? Well, because he's good. And he needs to be in the lineup every day. I don't need to play the guy who's not as good as he is. Let's find out who your real starters are on this team and play him for 150 games. And that's what I want to see. Is Manzardo one of those guys? And right now he's proving to me, yes, he is. If he falters, that's a different story. But just play him. I mean, Let's go.
Even if he hits 260 with some pop and he brings 20 to 25 homers hitting 260, are you not happy?
Yeah.
I'm elated.
And now he is playing. Okay, he's played in every game. He's got a lot of at-bats. Only Santana and Kwan have more. But I just don't want to see him out of the lineup. I'm disappointed for Lane Thomas because he's off to a slow start. I think Lane is such a nice upgrade for this team in center field. I really like that move. I'm glad they went out and got him. I'm glad he's here this year. And after watching Tyler Freeman play a really good center field for a guy who'd never played center field before, but hit, I think it was like 205. Okay, you got to do better than that. We had Miles Straw. Upgrading to Tyler Freeman's bat from Miles Straw is not really much of an upgrade. Lane Thomas should be an upgrade. That should happen. What have you thought of Gabe Arias so far at second base?
I actually thought he's looked pretty good.
Yeah, I do too.
I mean, defensively he's been... I guess I haven't recognized him. I haven't noticed him on defense, which is a good thing for my second baseman.
Except the one game he had where he made a couple of... He had one game where he bobbled that throw. He's going to the plate, and it didn't work out too well. But so far, I agree with you. Nothing has stood out in a negative way. His batting average is okay. He's at 250. He's only driven in two runs. But right now, he's not killing you.
No, I think if you look down the road, I don't know, month and a half, 2 months, he's still hitting 250, starting to drive in a couple more runs, you go, that's probably good enough. I'm probably not going to move a ton of guys around to get him out of the lineup. Especially, too, they talked so much about the pop that he developed and they felt he had in the minor leagues that hadn't gotten a chance to show itself once he's been in the majors. You've seen him drive out, at least one ball this year? I think that's it. Yeah, he has one homer. Again, even if you're trending upwards, 15, driving 15 to 20 balls out of the yard, that's what the team's missing. You look up and down the lineup, they miss the pop, right? You got rid of Josh Naylor. Well, you're missing the pop. Who's going to step in? It's probably not going to be just one guy unless Kyle Manzardo goes wild.
Again, it's early.
Yeah, of course.
But let me throw these things at you. When early concerns become early reality, I think that's where you sometimes have an issue. Lane Thomas, I expect to hit, but he's hitting 172. Brian Rocchio was great in the playoffs last year. He's hitting 192. He didn't pick up where he left off. Bo Naylor, who we're all hoping Bo figures it out, is off to a 174 start. Nolan Jones, who I'm giddy, is back in town. Give him some at-bats, let him figure it out. He's hitting 136 right now. John Kenzie Noel, who we love, 063 batting average. Schneeman, under 100. Jonathan Rodriguez hasn't had a hit this year, and Austin Hedges is at 200. You got a lot of guys who aren't hitting the ball real well right now.
I think you nailed it on the head. It's the whole point of you look at this team, and it's when your early concerns turn to reality.
Yep.
It's when I looked at all of the things that could go wrong, and it's not other things that are failing. It's like, oh, you've had some bad breaks. It's almost every point that I looked at in this team and go, that's not a sure thing. Everybody in the lineup outside of Kwan, Jose, Carlos Santana, and they're all sitting at the bottom of the order in terms of what they've done so far this early season.
So even though it's early, folks, that's the point. The concerns that we had even going into this are already on display, and that might be a problem. 216-474-0092. It's Baskin and Phelps with Volnick right here on The Fan. I'm Jeff Phelps. Jake's in for Andy today. NCAA basketball on our air tonight. We'll have the championship game, Florida against Houston. So you can listen in. Jake won't be doing his show tonight, but you'll be back at it on Tuesday, right?
I will indeed.
Hey, before we get into the torpedo bat, I want to send out a congratulations. Several years ago, we had a young guy on our show, Maxwell Moldovan, who was a golfer from Green and was at Ohio State. And Maxwell had... I think he'd qualified for the U.S. Open, right? Was on his way to the U.S. Open, if I recall correctly.
Yeah, that sounds right.
And congratulations to Maxwell. He won his first professional tournament over the weekend. And he did it in Brazil. Brazil. And how's this for cool? Is this a great way to win a tournament? He's on 18, okay? He has to get down in two to force a tie. And he's got a 50-foot putt. And he made it for eagle.
Jeez.
To win. 50-footer for eagle to win.
Yeah, it's absurd.
He's playing on the PGA Tour Americas at the Brazil Open. So congratulations to Maxwell Moldovan. We're happy for him, and we knew him when. Before he ever won, we knew him. So that's really good. I'm really happy for him.
I'm sure he sent out his congratulations to you just as you did to him.
I'm sure he did, yeah, yeah. Major League Baseball Commissioner Rob Manfred talked about the torpedo bat craze that's suddenly all over the place in Major League Baseball. And, of course, we know the deal. The Yankees hit some home runs and had a phenomenal series. And they're at the top of everything right now in Major League Baseball stats, batting average, run scored. They're right up there. But Manfred came out and made some comments about it that I actually agree with. And one thing he said, it was in a Q&A session with the New York Times, The Athletic, and he talked about the future of the torpedo bat and explained that they are good for baseball. And his quote is, "I believe that issues like the torpedo bat and the debate around it demonstrate the fact that baseball still occupies a unique place in our culture because people get into a complete frenzy over something that's really nothing at the end of the day." He said the bats comply with the rules. Players have actually been moving the sweet spots around in bats for years, which is true. You know, they're looking for an edge. But it demonstrates that something about the game is more important than is captured by television ratings or revenue or any of those things when you have the discussions and the debates about it. And I think he's right. I don't often agree with Rob Manfred, but I think that torpedo bats are good for the game. And Jake, one key reason why, it's a piece of wood. You're not allowed to stuff it with Super Balls anymore. You're not allowed to put cork in it. So what can you do with it? You can use different types of wood, which has been a common thing that players have tried to do. But this is just kind of changing the shape, the structure a little bit, and trying to manipulate a piece of wood. Nothing wrong with that. They fit within the rules.
Maybe it's just stuck up baseball person in me. Maybe it is that I just look at it and I'm like, I don't like that. And maybe it's just because it was the Yankees. Maybe that plays into a fact of it. That's where it's really highlighted. I hate it. The idea that you're just essentially, again, like you've tried to move the sweet spot. This is obviously the most dramatic that we've seen in terms of reshaping the actual bat. But I just look at, like, Anthony Volpe is my main, my main indicator of why I don't like it. Because I look at it and I look at every single home run he's hit this year. By the way, four, I think, after hitting like 12 last year while playing in Yankee Stadium. He's already up to four. I think it was a Joe Buck call from the ESPN broadcast. He literally goes, "Up, oh, Volpe pops it up to right." And that ball landed over the wall. In combination, a short porch and right for Yankee Stadium and a ball that really wouldn't have had a chance because it was inside on the hands of Volpe where he hits just about everything. And then it goes. You almost take out, not part of the skill of it, but part of the adjustment for hitters. It's like, adjust to hit it at the sweet part of the bat the way that everybody's been doing their entire childhood, growing up, going into the majors, and instead it's just kind of a, well, you'll probably hit better with this.
There's another guy who's, you know, I mean, this it couldn't work out better for this guy. His name's Keenan Long, and he's with a company called Long Ball Labs. And he's weighed in on this and he's done a bunch of interviews and he was on MLB Now and all kinds of things. And he said he wanted to point out something that people have butchered through this whole thing. And the typical baseball bat is, you know, just think of it, you know, the bat stays at least as wide, you know, at the end of the bat than because they're, you know, the torpedo bat tapers it at the end. But the normal bat structure, it's not really tapered. It's just rounded off at the end. He says it's a complete fallacy that the end of the bat is not important. And I think that's interesting because he said he keeps hearing this fallacy that the mass end of the barrel is not a not productive in the collision with the ball. I thought this is a lab guy talking. He said that's a fallacy. He said that's not true at all. He said it's a universal claim that it's good to take away mass from the barrel end of the bat. And he says no. But the torpedo bat's a little different. He said, I want to be clear, it's not true in the physics of hitting a baseball with a bat. He said the physics of the bat-ball collision in that 1 millisecond when the bat and the ball are touched is governed by the conservation of linear momentum. And the mass end of the barrel contributes to that equation even more so than the mass. So there you go. So it's working for some guys, but this dude who, you know, physicist, knows all this stuff, bat, all that stuff, he says, no, that stuff's important too, which might be why Aaron Judge is still smashing the ball and not using a torpedo bat.
Right. It's not,
it's
like,
still the guy swinging the bat.
Yeah. You still have to hit the ball. It's not, and it's not great for everybody. I think that was the main point that the Yankees made. It was like, just don't put this in the hands of every single hitter, and it's,
and they're immediately better.
Yeah, these aren't steroids
because,
that we're putting,
by God,
in your hands.
If that's the case, we're getting them for half the guys in the Guardians lineup.
Yeah, it's just the way that certain guys hit, you adjust it, and if they're constantly in on the hands slightly, it's not like you're getting sawed off every single time, and now you're hitting home runs when you're getting hit 3 inches above your hand. But if you struggle with your swing to get it hit, what is the traditional sweet part of the bat, and you keep handcuffing yourself with the ball a little bit and jamming yourself, well, this is sort of a quick fix to actually fixing the problem. That's where it bothers me, is instead of the adjustment to be made, it's a quick fix. It's, well, don't change your swing at all. It's a good swing. We'll just change the bat.
The one thing about this that I think is fascinating is that it's just a piece of wood. It's clearly, you know, guys have their specifics and everything else, and it's a big deal. But I do love the fact that Major League Baseball, and you know, think about how hard Major League Baseball players could hit if they use some of the, you know, different types of bat materials that are used at the college and high school level. I mean, it would be scary. And I'm glad that Major League Baseball hasn't gone to that. I'm glad they haven't put together composite types of bats and other things like that. They've stuck with wood, and I think that's the best way to go. The ball would jump off aluminum, whatever yeah, substance you want, it would be just terrible, I think, in Major League Baseball. And it would, I think it would really spoil the game. So I'm glad they've done that. But tinkering with a piece of wood and everything, that's fine. It's all in the rules. Especially in an age where, you know, if a hitter faces the same pitcher three times in a game, good luck. That rarely happens anymore.
Yeah. I think part of this, too, is I sit here and think about it, and of course Rob Manfred's going to tell you this is good for the game, right? Something very simple that in the rules they have written right now is not a problem, right? It's not juiced baseballs where you're like, you're clearly fiending for offensive production as a means to draw it back into the casual viewer. But the casual viewer, what do they want to see? See guys hit the ball. They want to see guys hit the ball over the
Absolutely.
Wall.
Absolutely.
They want to see home runs.
They want to see offensive action. Unless you're a freaky dude like me and loves watching great pitching.
Well, I do too. It's part of being the sort of baseball nerd side of it, right? But it draws in the casual viewer. If there's guys who traditionally aren't necessarily great hitters, right? And there's only a small change they need to make, and it is a torpedo bat. Yep. Again, I can point to Anthony Volpe from last year. Not really great offensive production. This year looks really good so far. If you can change that for the average viewer, it's great. Keep the torpedo bats. And what's Rob Manfred looking to do? Put eyes on the game. That's his most important job to some degree, is put eyes on the game. And if the torpedo bats don't break a rule in order to do it, I'm sure he'd love it.
It's just kind of funny that this is something that's occupied everybody early on in the season. Who would have thought it? You know? It's just a little change in bat, especially when they've been used in the past. This isn't just new this year. Giancarlo Stanton used them last year, as we saw against the Guardians in the playoffs. It just wasn't as, publicized, notarized, whatever. Because who literally pays attention to the bat that a guy's swinging? You just see a guy swinging a bat.
You think if the Milwaukee Brewers had five guys using this thing, anybody would have noticed?
Maybe because the game would have been more competitive. But one thing I keep going back to on this, a wise man by the name of Menigan, when this whole thing was going on, Dan just kept saying, "Have you seen the Brewers pitching staff?" So think all you want about the torpedo bat. Does it help? I don't know. Did it help these guys? I don't know. Was the fact that the Brewers pitching staff was just horrendous in that series, is that more important? Dano, is that more important?
They figured it out a little, but they've also, I think, gave up 8 yesterday as well to a really crummy team. So I got a feeling Brewers pitching has got something to do with
that.
That
might be part of it. When it comes to getting smart people on the show, by golly, we're all in. And a really smart person is coming up next. Cynthia Freeland from the NFL Network will be joining us here. Her thoughts on, do you overdraft a quarterback because he plays quarterback and you need one? She's next on Baskin and Phelps with Jake Volnick in for Andy.